My name is Brian Quinn. I'm from the town of Athenry. My family has been on Old Church Street in Athenry for the last six generations. And my wider family has been in this area probably for the last 200 or 300 years. Deep roots, and that is probably one of the reasons why I got interested in this history. The area of Athenry and the surrounding parishes and communities, from a 1916 point of view, I suppose the thing that started everything off was a series of land evictions in the 1880s. I would say, to use the language that people use today, that that radicalized the area around Crowell in particular, but had repercussions across Mid Galway. All of that land agitation created a situation where the RIC were hated. The establishment basically weren't respected in this area. And you can see it as well, I think, in that triangle of Ardrahan up to Castlegar, Clare Galway in the north and to Athenry in the east. Not many men went to the First World War, right? In areas outside that, like for example in Galway City, in places like Loughrea, a lot more men went to the war. And I think that led to there being a lot of relatively young men in that area. And that led then to a situation where they could be recruited into the IRB. And that was the main secret society. There were other smaller secret societies that were around, but I think at the end, they all ended up in the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And then when the Irish volunteers were formed, that was a natural pool of men that could be part of the volunteers. Volunteers, I think, were formed in around 1913. And I think there were a large number of them in this area. And then as the rising was being planned, it was recognised, that there was a particularly strong pool of men in this area, and that led to men like Liam Mellows and Alfie Monaghan being sent from Dublin by the IRB centres in Dublin to Galway. And Liam Mellows arrived, some people would say probably spring 1915, maybe in late 1914, and immediately took up residence in Athenry and began to train and organise the volunteers in the area. He stayed in Athenry in Broderick's on what's Cross Street now. That area, all of the main leaders from Athenry would live there. The reason he picked there probably is because near the train station, easy to get messages down from Dublin. But, he lived next door, or he stayed next door to Larry Lardner. He stayed in Broderick's, who were very strong in the volunteers. Stephen Jordan lived down the road. Frank Hines lived, within 300 or 400 metres. So, there was a pool of, IRB and Irish volunteer men living around him. And then he went out into the wider community as well. He spent a lot of time in Crowell and spent a lot of time organising all over the county. He had a number of arrests. For example, he was arrested around the 1st of April 1916, was sent to England. And really, a lot of the planning for the rising in County Galway happened while he was under house arrest in England. He did manage to escape and made it back to Galway and made it back to... He ended up out in Killeen in, I suppose, 3 or 4 days before the rising started. And when the rising started in Dublin, I think the telegrams coming from Dublin to Galway made the authorities in Galway aware that something was happening. And I think we can see from the witness statements that all of the major organisers in Galway City were rounded up on Easter Monday morning. But out in the countryside, in that area that we talked about, communications weren't as strong. And in some respects, the volunteers had stronger communications. So when the messengers started to come down from Dublin on the train to Athenry, Larry Lardner's house is basically 100 yards away from the train station at Athenry, and that's where the messengers would have gone, I suppose, in the months coming up to the rising, and that's where they went on Easter Monday. And then messengers went out. They went as far as Ballinsloe, but I suppose the main direction of the messengers would have been to Killeen, where Mellows was. Mellows got the messages, got the notification that they were out in Dublin, and they mobilised. They had guns stored in Killeen School, so the old school, it's knocked now, and they set off towards Clarenbridge. Bridge. So the first place they went was to Clarenbridge. Bridge. They attacked the barracks in Clarenbridge. Bridge. Because of the weapons situation, they weren't able to take it, and the local priest, because the barracks in Clarenbridge Bridge at the time was right opposite the church across the green there, and the local priest managed to convince them to call off the attack there. They moved on to Oranmore, attacked the barracks there. Again, they didn't get in. And really what they're looking for is weapons. In Oranmore, because it's so close to Galway, they were pushed back when a group of RIC and militia came from Galway City and pushed them back for more and more. At the same time, the Castlegar and Clare Galway men were moving or on the move, and they ended up in a skirmish at Carnmore Cross, killing an RIC man. After that, then, they all began to move back towards Athenry to the, what we call Mellows Campus today. It was the model farm at the time. And I would say probably on the Tuesday night, most of the men and women from Cumann na Mban were in Mellows Campus. You can't take what the volunteers were doing without thinking of what the British forces were doing at the time. There were British Navy ships in the bay. There are reports that they fired shots towards Merlin Park and Castlegar, nine shots in all. You know, and then you had British Marines landed in Galway City. And, of course, all the time, the RIC around the edges in Galway, Loughrea and other places were gathering and sending scouting parties. So this influenced what the volunteers were doing. I think that pushed them towards Mellows Campus first. Mellows Campus is too close to Galway, too close to the railway, so they pushed back from there to Myoad. At Myoad, that was kind of the first signs that things were beginning to unravel. And they began to send people home, particularly married men and first sons. And the food situation was critical at that point as well. They had 300 or 400 men. They didn't have enough food to feed them. So they were food scouting parties going out. They killed a bullock in Myoad. But again, you know, Myoad is probably not very defensible either, right? Too close to Galway, too close to Loughrea in particular, too close to the railway lines. So they stayed there for a night or two, and then they moved back to Lyme Park, which is where the rising ended. At that stage, Mellows was exhausted. Most of the leaders were exhausted. They hadn't slept probably in 3 or 4 days at least. At that point, on particularly on Saturday, they were getting notifications from Dublin that the rising was finished in Dublin. And they were encouraged, particularly by the clergy. Clergy had good views to what was happening around the country. And the rising was disbanded at Lyme Park. And most men went home. A lot of them got to Lyme Park and didn't realize where they were. So it took them a while to figure out how to get home. Then Mellows, Alfie Monaghan and Frank Hines went on the run and went up into the Slievochtys, stayed in the Slievochtys for a couple of months, made their way south. Eventually, Mellows made it to England and made it to America. And Frank Hines and Alfie Monaghan, they managed to evade capture as well. Larry Larner didn't get captured and a few others as well. As long as you stayed away from home, they didn't get captured. For the other men, RIC basically knew everyone. In some respects, they were able to figure out who was away for a week. They were the men who were involved in the rising. So I think in general, they were able to round up everybody who was involved. And that was probably 300 to 400 men in Galway. They shipped them to Dublin initially, then they put them on cattle ships, sent them to England, and they went to a number of prisons in England. And they eventually sent them to Frongoch, which was an internment camp in North Wales. Probably in July, August of 1916, there were 1,800 men in Frongoch. And that, to me, if looking at reading the stories about Frongoch, that is the classic prisoner of war camp. They ran the camp themselves within the rules set by the authorities at the time, but you know they did run the camp. And then you know there are stories about, for example, Stephen Jordan from Athenry. He was a shoemaker, and he became shoemaker for the camp. You know, it's those little stories that kind of give everything context that I find really interesting.